The vote for my advancement within Orbis Company's ranks had been delayed a week, partially because of what had happened to Bjorn, and partially because Dark had gone missing after the Heartbreaker's death. When he reappeared, all he had done was shrug, no matter how many times he was asked where he had been. Only Alexis still tried to pry answers out of him, but not even she could. By the time the vote took place, I was in a much better mental state, albeit still nervous at what it would mean to fail. But I tried not to dwell on it too much and kept myself busy. Funerals and too much pain to move made that easy. Dark brought me to the Lone Wolf, into a back room that was filled with the rest of Orbis Company. They were all gathered behind a long table facing a single chair. I recognized a few of them, Haru, Amani, and Alexis, but most of them were strangers to me, and that didn't calm my nerves. Not when my future was, once again, coming down to a vote. Dark instructed me to sit in the lone chair while he took his seat between Amani and Alexis. There was a dagger in front of each of them. Once we were both settled, Imani stood and began proceedings.
Orbis Company, we are gathered here today to decide if Michael Kingman, apprenticed mercenary in Orbis Company, has shown enough potential to be elevated to a full-fledged member. I will say a few words on his latest contract, and then we will proceed to his examination.
There were nods around the room.
Michael Kingman was taken in as a mercenary prior to his execution for his supposed murder of King Isaac of Hollow. We had reason to believe that Michael was in fact merely in the wrong place at the wrong time. Dark has told us, and I quote, "Michael is a small dog with a big ego and obsessed with not tarnishing the Kingman family's legacy any further. There's no reason to believe he killed King Isaac of Hollow."
Please. I was at least a medium-sized dog. How rude of them to say otherwise.
In the past week, Michael and Dark were tasked with investigating the refugees coming to Hollow for High Noble Mothlem Bravin, now deceased. They investigated, but then confronted High Noble Mothlem Bravin after a few of the refugees were murdered in the manner of the Heartbreaker serial killer, who ravaged Hollow 2 years ago, and is credited with assassinations, including Berserker Rami and mercenaries Bottles and Flowers of Machina Company. The confrontation ended up with High Noble Mothlem Bravin being thrown from the Hollow battlements.
Let the record note that I threw that maggot off. Michael was simply along for the adventure. Any repercussions for killing an employer should be on me, not him.
Noted. After their arrest, and an audience with Queen Serena Hollow, Dark and Michael accepted a new contract, finding the Heartbreaker and Waylayer who were operating in this city. I think we all know what happened from there. Does anyone need any clarification before we commence the examination?
Haru raised his hand.
I want the record to show that Michael and Dark avenged mercenary Bjorn Orbis.
Amani looked toward the old woman.
Already noted.
Haru nodded and lowered his hand. Imani took her seat.
Unless there's anything else, we should continue. Since Michael has not met everyone, I suggest everyone state their name and position within Orbis Company before asking their question. Who would like to go first?
Haru Orbis, the weapons master of Orbis Company. My question is simple. How did the Heartbreaker die? I want to know the details. I want to know if it was painful.
I choked him to death. I looked at my hands. I watched the life leave his eyes, shot him in the head, and then threw his body into the nearby lake. He died begging for mercy. Haru took the dagger that was lying on the table in front of him and stabbed it into the wood.
For Michael Kingman.
It was the dainty woman's turn. Her eyes were the same shade of blue as Naomi's, which meant she was a Thebian.
Cassia Orbis, Orbis Company's navigator, geographer, and mapmaker extraordinaire. How much do you know of the outside world, Michael? What are the differences between the masks that the Vargo and the Medicili clans on the Gold Coast wear?
I don't know.
What lies beyond Eham and the Eastern Sea?
I don't know. Cassia rolled her eyes dramatically and then folded her arms.
Can you at least tell me what the title of the leader of the Thebian Empire is?
Naomi had told me it recently. I knew she had, but the word escaped me at that moment. I said as much.
Then my vote is clear. Letting you into the world unsupervised would be disastrous. There's more he still needs to learn.
Cassia sat back down.
Against Michael Kingman.
Another rose to ask their question. A big, dark-skinned man who wore a stark white apron over his clothes.
Titus Orbis, the cook of Orbis Company. Do you have a favorite food? If so, what is it?
Candied nuts.
Interesting. How do they season them in Hollow?
With cinnamon and chilies.
Haven't seen that variation before. In New Dracon City, it's only sugar, and on the Gold Coast, it's ginger and garlic. Tell me, why is it your favorite?
It reminds me of a friend.
Do you know how to make it?
I nodded.
Good. I require you to make me some once we're done with all this.
Titus took the dagger in his hand and stabbed it into the wood.
For Michael Kingman.
A blind man stood next.
Otto Orbis, Fabrications Master of Orbis Company. At such a young age, your reputation precedes you. People whisper about you in the streets. But all I see is a child in over his head, struggling not to drown. Prove me wrong. How were you able to catch the raven's lightning in the Church of the Wanderer?
Dark glared at me. We must have gone over this during that day I forgot about. He wasn't going to like what I was about to say. I don't know. Dark trained me about fabrications. In detail, I think. But I've forgotten the day entirely.
So you've had memory issues in the past? At age 19?
I gave him the condensed version of my history. No one at the table gave any response to it, which included no sympathy.
Then this choice is clear for me.
Otto sat down.
The child is too impulsive to be on his own, and has yet to understand the price he pays every time he uses fabrications. Against Michael Kingman.
I rubbed my hands over my face. This wasn't going as well as I'd hoped. Another mercenary was already on his feet. A short man, who was missing his right hand but wore multiple pistols. He was dressed exactly as those from New Dracon City had been.
Gale Orbis, the Boom Boom Boy. I refuse to vote for someone from Hollow. Against Michael Manchild.
Alexis had warned me there would be one mercenary who would never vote for me, no matter what I did. Must have been referring to this one. It was a very heavily tattooed woman's turn. No part of her skin wasn't covered.
Jade Orbis, tattooist of Orbis Company. If you could pick an image or a sigil to encompass everything you stood for, what would it be?
A crown, being pulled apart by two hands. Dark was glaring at me again, but Jade was smirking.
Really now? How come? Didn't think of you as a fan of Tossberg Company.
I'm not. That symbol was created in opposition to my family. And I want to take it back. Make it into a symbol for me. My sister can carry the Kingman family when she returns. She's more than capable of it. I can become something else.
What would you like that symbol to stand for?
The symbol of the future mercenary king.
For Michael Kingman.
My turn.
The elderly woman rose to her feet ever so slowly.
I am Nona. Historian for Orbis Company, and a member of the council that records the natural order of events at the Institute of Amalgamation.
The whole not-blinking thing didn't get less creepy the more I saw of her.
Do you know any attributes, name included, of the one known as the First Kingman?
No.
What about the names of the three Wolven Kings, or their relation to each other?
No.
Oh, dear me, how disappointing. How about God's favorite color?
She knew my answer the moment she finished her question. There was a chance I could have answered the others, but these were impossible. Did anyone know the answers? Nana sat down with a frown on her face.
Sadly, I don't think it's your time to be independent yet, sweetie. Try again in another decade. Against Michael Kingman.
Besides the commander of Orbis Company, who sat next to Imani with his hand against his cheek, snoring slightly, the only ones left were Dark, Alexis, and Imani. I could still pass if they all voted for me. Alexis stood next.
Alexis Orbis, gunmaster of Orbis Company. Do you know why I joined Orbis Company?
I hesitated. Dark claimed that she had joined to be with him after Zara died, but but the way she was looking at me and her question suggested I was missing something. Or maybe I wasn't. Maybe the answer was still correct, but the reasoning was wrong. You joined because of Dark.
Correct. You have my vote.
Another dagger in the table.
For Michael Kingman.
Dark didn't stand.
My eyes are open. Against Michael Kingman.
Everyone was caught off guard by that. But before the bubble of surprise could grow, Imani rose.
Imani Orbis, second in command of Orbis Company. Do you know what goes bump in the night, Michael?
I was completely thrown by what Dark had just done. Was he trying to get rid of me?
Yes.
Are you scared of it?
No. They die like any other.
Don't forget that. Ever. Four, Michael Kingman.
Five daggers on the table, and five still lying flat. A tie. What happened now? I wasn't the only one confused about what had just happened. Bjorn's death had created an imbalance, one that the commander of Orbis Company would have to settle himself. Imani nudged him in the side until he was awake. The commander, a middle-aged man with sun-soaked skin, grumbled to life. His hair was wispy and dyed from the sun until he was blonder than any of the riders. As he cracked his neck, I noticed that he had the words "Hold Fast" tattooed over his knuckles.
Is he a full member or not?
It's a tie.
So, it's up to me then.
The commander of Orbis Company rose to his feet.
Michael Kingman, my name is Ty Orbis, and I am the commander of this company. Normally, I'm not required to vote on these matters, because I don't really care who or what you are. So long as you are graded some once you join us. I don't have a question for you. I have a test.
Ty held out both his hands, fists closed.
Left or right? One has a sun in it, and the other doesn't. If you get the sun, you have my vote.
Seriously? All of this, and it comes down to luck?
Yes. You'd be amazed how important luck is to a mercenary. One without any is useless. You never want to have someone like that at your beck when it all goes to shit.
And if I refuse to play?
Then you'll be disobeying my orders. And I will retaliate by disowning you from Orbis Company. You'll be known as a rogue mercenary with no support system to protect you from J. Prince or Regal Company.
He gave me a toothy smile when my face dropped.
Didn't think I knew about that. I'd be an irresponsible leader if I didn't. How long do you think you'll last against them when they can kill you without any repercussions?
Not very long.
Then choose. Left or right.
Did I know anything about the commander of Orbis Company? Which hand was dominant? Had Alexis or Haru or Dark or Imani given me any indication which hand it might be? There had to be some clue I was missing. It couldn't just be luck. This was a test, and I was too blind to see how to win it.
Are you going to pick, or just sit there staring at me like a madman?
Maybe it really was up to luck. Right. Ty opened that hand. There was nothing in the palm.
Wrong.
How do I... He opened the other one. The gold sun was there. I had lost. I was still an apprentice mercenary. I would have to leave Hollow with Dark, and I wouldn't be able to go find Gwen or avenge Dawn. I sat there, still stunned, doing my best not to let my jaw hit the floor as everyone else continued like nothing important had happened.
Imani.
Ty returned to his seat.
Finish up business, will you?
With pleasure, sir.
Imani took out two envelopes and placed them on the table.
Listen up, everyone. We have two big contracts and we'll need everyone to get them done in a timely manner. The commander, Nona, and Haru will return to headquarters. We've all been away too long. Don't want the locals to forget about us.
What are the contracts?
First one is in New Dracon City. It's a-
Mine!
The asshole with only one hand was the one that interrupted.
Don't care about the job. I'm going. Otto, you in?
Absolutely.
That makes two for that contract. We'll still need a few more. The other contract is on the Gold Coast. It's a-
Oh, me! I haven't been near the ocean in over a year. I can barely remember how it looks.
Imani rubbed her brow.
Does anyone care about the details or just where the contracts are?
There was a unanimous consensus that the locations mattered the most, to Imani's annoyance. I remained silent, waiting for Dark to choose for the both of us. Given how that had just gone, I really was going to be attached to him for as long as I lived. There was little debate, as most of the mercenaries decided where they were going. Titus and Alexis were joining Cassia on the Gold Coast, while Otto, Gale, Imani, and Jade were headed to New Dracon City.
The Gold Coast. About time I went home.
Having wanted to leave Hollow for years, I had to blink away the tears now that it seemed I would have to go. I didn't want to. I wanted to be with my family now that I had one, and now that was the last thing that would happen. Imani covered a few more minor details that we all needed to know about. The emergence of new, younger pirate crews along the Gold Coast, and an update about the Civil War in the Warring States. Both would make traveling harder for us, but it was incomparable to what the Rebellion had done to Hollow. Once we were all excused, only Titus came up to me to wish me luck on my advancement next time, and to say I would have his vote when the time came. And then Dark and I were alone.
Why did you vote against me?
Because you aren't ready to be on your own. You're too focused on what you want and what you think is important, rather than what I told you to improve on. I was trying to help you, and you ignored my advice.
But I helped you stop the Heartbreaker and a Waylayer. Doesn't that
count for something? It does. But there aren't many of us in Orbis Company, and we have to be able to trust each other. As it is now, I don't trust you not to abandon your mercenary obligations if something about your family comes up. Or am I wrong?
I didn't want to lie, for once, so I didn't respond, giving him his answer anyway.
This will be good for you, Michael. Get away from your family, see the world, and become your own man.
Who's to say I can't be my own man with them by my side? Why is that worse than being the man you want me to become? Besides, Dark, I have one more question.
What?
Are you really trying to help me, or just keep me where you can see me? Is that what you did with Alexis? Did you force her to be with you because you can't let people go after losing Zara? How many of them know what you are and what you're planning to do?
I don't think even you know what I have planned, Michael.
You're going to kill all the dragons. What else?
And then the realization hit me. Meeting Zara in Dark's mind had given me an easy answer, that Dark was using her death to give himself purpose, and I had accepted it without protest. Especially when Dark told me he wanted to die after he got revenge. But killing all the dragons was what Dark had to do to make himself feel better, just as Angelo had to kill all the high nobles. Their desires were different. They both cared about their lovers more than anything else in the world. I was such a fool. It hadn't been vengeance that I had seen in the depths of Dark's heart. It was a woman pleading for redemption for the man she had once loved. And if that was a representation of what he wanted more than anything else, why had I ever believed his ultimate goal was about revenge? And just like that, I found another connection between father and son.
You lied to me in the Archmage room. Vengeance is just a way for you and Angelo to repair your wounded pride. It's not what you really want. You want to bring Zara back from the dead. And Angelo wants to bring Catherine back. It's about love. And only one of you can do it. That's why you're opposing each other.
My body was tense as he looked over his shoulder, no smile or grimace evident, only a gaze that went right through me, sharper than any blade. It reminded me of Angelo when his friendly persona had shattered. My body was cold as ice, and no matter what I did, no warmth would cover my skin.
Find my father if you want to change sides.
If I want a third choice?
Become strong enough to stand on your own.
I already am.
No, you're my apprentice.
A calmness ran through my body like a cool gust of wind on a blistering summer day.
You think that matters? Look me in the eyes and see if I'm lying.
Dark reluctantly did.
A Wolven King has kidnapped my sister, so excuse me if I'm a little more volatile than usual. If either you or your father hurt my friends and family to bring back Catherine or Zara, I'll devour your heart.
Care to repeat what you said?
I'm your apprentice, Dark.
Were you foolish enough to think I wouldn't take after you? Dark said nothing, eyes as red as they had been at the underground lake. No longer was I a dog that he could direct without pushback. In that moment, Dark finally saw me as a threat, that I might become what he was to save those I loved, just as he had. And so, we monsters stared each other down, each waiting for the other to make the first move. I was almost home when I found Serena waiting for me at the end of the Western Bridge. There were no ravens with her, and she didn't even notice me until I said her name. The river running beneath us had held her attention until then.
No congratulations on my engagement?
Bruises covered her neck, purple and splotchy, as if painted on with a brush.
How very impolite of you.
I'm trying not to lie so much.
How convenient.
Serena hopped off the ledge she had been sitting on.
Walk with me?
Always. Together, side by side, we walked toward the Church of the Wanderer and the giant hole where the great stone square had once been. The Church of the Wanderer had remained semi-intact. The bell tower collapsing had only destroyed part of it, but was closed for the foreseeable future. Losing two reclaimers in the span of 3 months had left the church authorities with little faith in the Hollow Branch. The monks had all been shipped out to other places, and no one knew when or if the church would reopen. There were no advocators in the area either, though it had been full all week, and when I pressed Serena as to where they had gone, all she did was shrug. How'd you get away from all your ravens?
Snuck out. No one can really contain me if I don't want them to.
No one?
No one.
Does Jay Prince know that? The Queen of Hollow didn't respond, squatting down to examine some moon's tears that had grown up out of the hole. Their light was guiding our way around it. She plucked one, then put it in her hair.
He'll learn in due time.
I felt like I was dancing with a partner who didn't want to touch me. I would have to be blunter if I wanted to get any answers from her tonight. Are you here to make sure I won't tell anyone about that tattoo on your wrist?
I know you won't. Those were a dying woman's foolish last words. Only a queen remains.
She continued to walk around the pit, toward the church. I followed like a moonstruck fool. A little further around, one hand holding her hair from blowing in her face and the other over her heart, she looked down to the lake beneath the square. The remnants of our struggle were still evident, the area crushed by falling debris. Most of the wood and metal down there would be scavenged in the dead of night by those brave enough to venture into the pit once advocators stopped patrolling the area. We stood there together for a time.
Was my father scared before he killed himself? Some days I wonder if he was.
No. Just tired. And hopeful that he was going to see Davy again.
Some feelings are eternal. I wonder if they will ease with time.
Serena closed her eyes, enjoying the cool wind blowing against her face.
This is the part where you tell me not to marry Jay Prince, but to run away with you, Michael, in case you have forgotten your cues.
You wouldn't still be here if you wanted to do that.
You're right. We'd already be gone.
Why are you here, Serena? Serena sat down on the edge of the pit, letting her legs dangle over it. Only when I followed did she answer.
Do you believe in God?
You're avoiding my question.
Humor me.
It doesn't matter if I do or don't. Only that I'll hold them accountable if I ever run into them.
Why are you like this? Why were your family and its problems ingrained into you like chiseled marble? I would trade away my last name, crown, and lifestyle in an instant if I could.
I think I was the only member of my family who wouldn't.
Why not?
I hesitated, looking up at the stars and moons in the sky. It all seemed so serene. There was no noise on the rest of the aisle with the church in such a half-formed state. The only light came from Kingman Keep. For once, this city seemed at peace. I thought it was the only way people would love me. That my life was worthless unless I used it in service to Hollow. That I had to be a part of something greater. And if I wasn't, then I wouldn't be remembered whenever my time comes. Because for some reason, that scares me more than anything else.
To be forgotten feels more like death than death.
A mentor told me we die twice. Once with the body, and another when our name is spoken out loud for the last time. I was never scared of that, though. Thinking I may never see my family again was worse.
Do you believe in God? Serena blinked back tears.
Yes. Because if they don't exist, I'll never see my father or brother again. All I want is a real family again. People to hold me when I'm upset and tell me it'll be okay even if it won't.
I put my arm around her and held her close, and she cried into my chest, as if she was crying for the first time, as I had after King Isaac's death. I suspected this was her first moment of vulnerability in over a decade. There was no lonelier person than the one who sat on a throne, and even I had forgotten that. It was some time before she was able to speak without sniffling, but I was there until she composed herself and sat upright again.
My apologies.
Don't. We've all been there.
But I am the queen. A higher standard is set for me.
That's what I said about being a kingman. Look how that turned out.
I don't remember when I stopped being a child, but whenever it was, God, do I miss those simpler days. The pressure was still there, but it seemed manageable.
10 years ago for me.
I think it's about the same for me. When my brother died, my mother and father were never willingly in the same room again. Adrian turned inward, and the people that were always supposed to be there suddenly weren't. I lost so many people so quickly, and I think it broke me.
Everyone is broken in one way or another. But I'm starting to realize that the beauty of life, the joy of living, is finding others that are broken in a way that covers your weakness, exposes your strengths, and makes you stronger together. That's all love is. Familiar or romantic, there's no difference. I can't do it all on my own. And neither can you. Don't try to.
Asshole. Stop being so overdramatic.
Given what's ahead of me, I'd rather be a blind fool than a wise man. Serena waited for me to elaborate. Gwen left Hollow. And I failed my mercenary advancement test, so I can't go find her. I go wherever Dark does. I don't know when I leave, or if I'll ever return to Hollow. And this messed up city is all I've ever known. I've always wanted to leave, and yet I'll miss it. For some reason. This time, she comforted me. Guess both our lives are about to change.
Guess so. Do you know where you're going?
The Gold Coast. What?
Chloe, you lovable bitch. She tried to tell me earlier, but I was focused on other things. Didn't realize what she was saying.
Kind of like me right now.
Michael, the royal wedding is going to be held on the Gold Coast, in my mother's hometown. And Chloe was quick to tell me that we would be hiring mercenary support until we are certain that Jay Prince is trustworthy.
He's not. But does that mean...
Yes. You may be leaving Hollow, but you won't be alone. Orbis Company has been tasked with my protection. Are you willing to see another part of the world with me? One last adventure before we do what we...
I finally get it. Their catastrophic love. She stared at me with longing eyes.
Michael, our duty.
I kissed her, and she kissed me back. And it was the worst thing we could have done. I walked into the Church of the Wanderer alone. It was abandoned. The lanterns were dark, and the fallen bell remained in the very center, the stone and pews around it obliterated. As I strolled down the center, my fingers grazed the tops of the pews. It felt harsher than I remembered, wood that hadn't been cared for properly. A seat of splinters fit for a guilty man's conscience. There was no comfort in this hollow ground. Well, at least not for me. Yet, it still reminded me of that place I had been within my mind.
That church where I had said my final farewells to Dawn. It didn't exist, but this was the closest I was ever going to come to it with my eyes open and my mind focused. There were things that still needed to be said, feelings to be resolved, and tears to be shed without people being concerned about my emotional stability. Thankfully, the church had been evacuated, and no one would be here anytime soon. No one would know I had ever been here. No one would remember this moment. No one would record these words. It was just for me. I gingerly sat down in the first pew. The faceless statue was my only companion. I laced my fingers together and hesitated. Dear God, I think it's time we had a conversation. The Legacy of the Mercenary King 2, The Two-Faced Queen by Nick Martell is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2021 by Nick Martell. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Production copyright 2024 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Narrated by Nick J. Russo and Terrence Aselford. Featuring Nick J. Russo as Michael, Carolyn Kashner as Serena, Keith Richards as Dark, Laura C. Harris as Naomi, Zeke Alton as Trey, and Nora Ashrati as Dawn. With additional performances by Amanda Forstrom, Bradley Foster Smith, Chris Davenport, Chris Stinson, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Walker, Colleen Delaney, Crystal Lee, Daniel Yaka, David Quiqui, Drew Kopis, Elena Anderson, Dawn Ursula, Eric Mesner, Ava Wilhelm, Gabriel Michael, Gail Shalon, Ian Putnam, Joel David Santer, Jonathan David Bullock, Julian Irons, Kayla Rivera, Ken Jackson, Lise Bruno, Lydia Craniotis, Matthew Pauly, Michael Glenn, Morgan Dalabeda, Nanette Savard, Natalie Van Sistine, Rainer Gabriel, Richard Rowan, Rob McFadgen, Samantha Cooper, Scott McCormick, Stephanie Namet Parker, Steve Wanell, Stephen Carpenter, Tanya Milojevic, Todd Schofield, Wynn Delano, and Yasmin Twazon. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producer, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Legacy of the Mercenary King, you might also enjoy Red Rising's Sons of Ares by Pierce Brown and Rick Hoskin. All these titles and many more are now available at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening to hear a preview from Red Rising Saga 1, Red Rising.
Mustang tackles someone off the battlements. I slide tackle one of the archers as he levels his bow at her. Outside, Pax shouts for me to open the gates. He's actually crying for combat. I follow Mustang down into their courtyard, jumping from the parapets down to where she fights a big Siri student. I end the boy with my elbow and take my first glimpse of the Bread Fortress. The castle is an unfamiliar design, a courtyard leading to several buildings, and a huge keep where the bread bakes, making my stomach rumble. But all that matters to me is the gate. We rush to it. Shouts from behind us. Too many for us to fight. We get to the gate, just as 36 House Seri students run at us across the courtyard from their keep.
Hurry!
Milia shoots arrows at the enemy from the parapets. Then I open the gate. He shoves me aside. He's shirtless, massive, muscled, screaming. His hair is painted white and spiked with sap to form two horns. A piece of wood as long as my body serves as his club. The Hauseri students flinch back. Some fall, some stumble. A boy screams as Pax thunders close.
Pax, I'll tell mothers!
He wants no nickname as he charges forward like a minotaur possessed. When he hits the mass of House Ares students, it is ruin. Boys and girls fly through the air like chaff on reaping day.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.